there to my friends. My name is Joseph Ernest Howard Sr. I was born in 1930, September 2nd, to Mr. and Mrs. James Bailey Howard. My mother's name is Susie, originally from Glacier Bay area. She belonged to the Eagle Clan that settled in Juneau, Alaska. My father, James Bailey Howard, originally came from Yakutat, Alaska. My grandparents also came from Juneau. My mother's family is known as people that grew in the grasslands of Glacier Bay before the glacier even started to grow out where it is today. Before that, that's where the Tlingit Nation came migrating from Glacier Bay area. Some of them landed in Juneau, Alaska, Juneau, Alaska, Angoon, Alaska, Sitka, Alaska, Cake, Alaska, and Ketchikan, Wrangell, and Petersburg. So we have Tlingits from Haines, Yakutat, Juneau, Angoon, Juneau, Tenneke, and all the way down to Ketchikan. Both my father and mother were married before my sisters and I were born. I'm the only boy out of 8 children. I had 7 sisters. We are all full-blooded Tlingits. We are all born and raised in the Sitka area. I was born in our camp known as Ashko Bay. In camp, we lived at camp for at least a month and a half so that our parents could put up enough food, meat, and fish for the winter. The only brother I had was way older, old enough to be my dad. He was the only son to my dad in my dad's previous marriage. So he was my half-brother. His name was Eli Howard. I was educated in public schools in Sitka, Alaska in the early 40s. I first went to the government school, which is right at the village of Sitka, Alaska. We've got that building from the government, and it was towed to Sitka in the early 30s. Hot Springs. It used to be an army hospital. It was towed to Sitka and erected there just at the borderline of the Tlingit village in Sitka. That's where most of us went to school, under the government schools of Alaska, Territory of Alaska. And in 1945, we finally got integrated. And most of us that were in higher grades, like junior high, we went to the public schools. It was hard for us because we were Tlingits. We weren't allowed to speak in our own language, and if we did, we got into trouble for that. And then it took almost 2 years for our Caucasian brothers and sisters, of course, we call them that now, because years ago they were all angry with us for coming to their school. They gave us a bad time for 2 years. They threw rocks at us. They called us Siwashes. They called us everything. It got so bad I used to tell my sister that we should carry rocks in our pockets just to go to school, take all the shortcuts, stay away from the Caucasian kids so that we won't get in trouble. And years ago, we used to have permission just to go to the store. There used to be a gate at the south end of the village, and our people used to have to write permission from the Russian guards just to go to the store. And none of our people were allowed to go in liquor stores. None of our people were allowed to borrow money from the bank. And in the theaters, we had to sit on the right-hand side as you go in. It was kind of hard. But, like I said, it took 2 years for our Caucasian friends to even get used to us. Finally, as we grew older in public schools, our Caucasian friends are today some of our best friends, and most of us that went to the public schools are not living anymore. And some of us are still living today, like myself. I became religious. Most of the Klinkit people belong to the Russian Orthodox churches since they got established and built a cathedral there in Sitka in 1840. But before they built the St. Michael's Cathedral, the Russian captain, which was Baranov, told the priest to build a smaller church upon a hill just at the south end of the Indian village up on a hill where the fort, the Russian fort, sits right now, just behind it. That's where they built the first Russian church in Sitka. I'd say it was 1838, something like that. After that, they started to build the St. Michael's Cathedral, which was founded in 1840. Bishop Innocent was the architect and builder of most of the churches in Alaska at that time. After the Russian Orthodox Church, St. Michael's Cathedral, was built, priest went down to the village and talked to our leaders, like Chief Gatlian and all the Klinkit leaders, to have our people come to the church. So that's how we got adopted into the Russian Orthodox churches. At that time, most of the Klinkit people in the Sitka area was automatically baptized into the Orthodox Church. Our heritage consisted of how we should put up our foods for the winter, such as going out hunting and preserving the meat by smoking the deer meat and preserving it in seal grease. Seal grease is made out of seal blubber and cut into small pieces or chunks and boiled before to even start to cook it like you'd cook bacon today, to get the grease out of the fat and be sure that the fat or grease doesn't get burnt. If it gets burned, it starts to turn color. When it's pure white, it's when it's really good. That's how we make shell grease. And we could eat the shell fat that's already cut up and fried to get the oil out, and then we preserve our deer meat in there, seal meat or bear meat. We smoke the deer meat for a couple of days and smoke the bear meat for 3 days because it's much harder and you have to cook it longer than the deer meat. And then we put up a lot of dry fish. I learned how to put up dry fish by watching my parents and my uncles and aunts during the times that we went to camp for 2 months at a time. We learned to dress out the salmon, how we made brine to glaze the salmon before we even started to smoke it. And we leave the fish after we cut the heads and guts out. We put the fish in brine for at least 20 minutes and then take it out of the brine and hang it up for about 30 minutes so that the brine could stop dripping, and then put it in a smokehouse, all of the fish that's been prepared for smoking. After we put all the fish for that are being prepared in the smokehouse, we start the fires. It depends on how many hundred of fish in one smokehouse. Back then, we used to put 300 smoked fish in there, no problem. A lot of hard work, but it had to be done. The men folks did all the hard work. The women helped by carrying the fish from the boats up to where the fish are being prepared for drying. And after they're prepared, like gutting the fish out, after we hang it up on the racks for the brine to stop dripping off the fish, you carry it from the outside rack to the inner part of the smokehouse and then hang them up there. Depending on how many fish you have in a smokehouse, you might build 3 or 4 fires at one time in those great big smokehouses. We burn the smoke. We build the smoke, the fire, and make smoke out of alder wood. And to prevent the fish from burning or cooking right away, our fathers would put racks above the fire, about 3 feet above the fire, and put shiplap on the racks there to keep the heat down from the fish, and the smoke would spread out evenly and smoke the fish. It would take about 2 to 3 days and then start filleting it out again, and then could hang it up for 2 more days or 3 days, depending on whether you wanted dry fish or half-dried fish. After 2 or 3 days of smoking, you take it down again and then fillet some more out, make the sides larger and kind of thin the meat down and take strips out. Those are the best parts of the smoked fish. You could completely dry those strips by hanging them on little poles that's strung up in the interior of the smokehouse. Everybody takes turns on keeping the fire going. In the village, in the camp, there's about 7 or 8 families, depending on how big our family is. We have about 6 smokehouses, 6 living quarters out there. Some of them would take their tents and live in the tents for about a month and a half while we're all drying fish. The men folks would go hunting the second day and then have a big feast after the hunters come back. A lot of boiled deer meat or open fire baked. Families dwindling down now, but some of us are trying to keep the heritage going. I know I taught my friends back home how to go about drying fish. I told them how to do it, how to fillet it out, and how we should cut our deer meats to be smoked, and how to preserve the deer meat in seal grease. I learned all that from my father and mother and my uncles. Years ago, a new family would have their children stay by their uncles and aunts until 4 years was up. Within 4 years after the age of 5, they would move to the uncle's and aunt's house, and it was up to the uncles and aunts to teach the younger people the heritage of our Thlinkit ways of life. Just imagine, within a month it had maybe 2,000 smoked fish, maybe more, and about 10 buckets of smoked deer meat preserved in seal grease. It would be enough for the winter, and we hold potlatches starting in November of every year. This potlatches is the way we thank our uncles and aunts. I belong to the Eagle clan, just like my mother. The children of the Thlinkit Nation follow the mother. Like my mother was eagle, so that makes me automatically an eagle. Anyway, when we have potlatches, it's up to the uncles to take care of the loved one that died on the eagle side. Like this year, lost 3 eagles, and it's up to the ravens to get together and help the people that's in mourning. By helping, I mean a lady, if she lost her husband, she's not allowed to touch a knife for 1 month. And she's not allowed to clean her own house. She's not allowed to do any kind of work for at least 40 days. And the people that's in mourning are supposed to cover their mirrors for at least 40 days. And the people that's appointed to take care of them while they're in mourning goes to their house every morning and does their dishes, does their house cleaning, does their remix their bed, cooks for them, and then tells stories until it's bedtime. It's just a Tlingit tradition. A lot of us are still trying to carry it on nowadays. And now most of our elders are dying off. But I know when I get back to Sitka, I have to take up my position again. I am the chief of the Eagle Clan. I've been a chief now going on 6 years. But because of my schooling here at the seminary, I've lost 2 years of my duties, but when I get back, I'll carry on again as chief. I've been appointed as chief of the Eagle Clan because I know the Tlingit heritage, I know the dances, I know the songs that we should sing when we're in mourning, and all that traditional beliefs that I know. That is why I was chosen a chief, and I speak my language very fluently. That is another reason why I was chosen. My father was chief of the Raven Clan, and now I am the chief of the Eagle Clan.